if everyone is. It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy, and the Mayo Dublin build-up continues. Another big show for you. The second of three this week. We are looking forward to Saturday. It's getting closer. Some of you have tickets. Some of you don't. I would advise maybe building more walls around your houses if you have tickets at this stage. Edwin McGrail, how are you?
I'm good, Rob. How are you?
I don't know. The ticket hunt is a frenzy at this stage. I've just seen the front of the Mayo News Sports section. Like, I might be stealing your thunder here, but one of the all-time great front pages of a sports section in the Mayo News, and that's saying something.
Yeah, it's definitely up there. It's top class. Credit to Mike and to Jen Murphy for it's an amazing front page. People will be hopefully picking it up tomorrow, and they'll be blown away by it.
Yeah, it's really good. It just builds the excitement. We've got, speaking of building the excitement, we've got a special guest on to kind of help us along in the week. I'm not sure we're going to, like, I have a few rules in the background. Someone wanted to write into the rule book that you couldn't have two Brafey men on the same podcast, but I ruled that out myself. I want you to know, Edwin, I said, no, we'll allow it when needed. We have another Brafey man on here this week, don't we?
Yeah, not just a Brafey man, a Karen Orler man, to be even more precise, you know? So yeah, we're keeping it very local, yeah.
Yeah. That's that. Well, that might be a rule going forward. Seamus O'Shea, you are very welcome along to the Mayo News Football Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much, lads. Thanks for having me.
Ah, sure. Look, it's great to hear from you. You're sitting back, you're enjoying life. You have a family life to concern yourself as well. We know that from last year, obviously, a proud parent as well. It's deep off the top, but I just wonder, that distraction is probably no harm in your world, because the change of not playing football was probably pretty dramatic anyways.
Yeah, I don't have a huge amount of time now at the moment, yeah, so it's kind of worked out well. If I was kind of sitting around the house here in the evening and the lads were going training, I'd probably find it more difficult. But my time was well allocated for now at this stage. So, it's been a nice change of pace. Kind of the weird thing with COVID is that it's been nice. You know, my little girl was born last September, so it's been pretty cool. Like, otherwise I'd be at work all the time. You'd be getting back at 7 or 8, so you wouldn't see her until the weekend, basically. Like, so it's been kind of nice the last year. You get to spend a lot of time with the family, so it's been good.
Yeah, the old distractions are fantastic at this time of year. You're looking forward to this game like the rest of us. How have you found the season so far, the football season? It's an odd one. I mean, you're not far off an age that can well remember the days when there wasn't too many backdoor games and all that kind of stuff. But it is strange. It's back to the old system. It's a shorter championship, not a whole lot of games. What did you make of it this season so far?
Yeah, it kind of went along the lines as expected, didn't it? If last year was kind of a bit of an outlier and we had kind of novel pairings in the semi-finals, obviously Cavan and Tip winning big provincial championships in Munster and Ulster. This year has been kind of... Yeah, it's been pretty tame so far. There hasn't been any kind of major shocks. If we were to pick the top four teams at the start of the year, we probably would have picked these four. The only one that we probably would have question marks over is whether it's Mayo or Galway or potentially Tyrone or Donegal or something like that. So it's kind of along the lines as expected. So it's maybe not as exciting as last year so far, but hopefully that'll mean there'll be, you know, better pairings in the semi-final, that there'll be more excitement and there'll be closer games.
Chris Barrett was on with Billy Joe Padden and he was kind of saying that he wasn't too sure how much football he'd watch, you know, that kind of way. Were you thinking the same way before the championship? Have you found yourself kind of sometimes wanting to watch it, sometimes not too interested?
Yeah, I wasn't. To be honest, I was the same. I kind of thought when I finish up that I'd take no interest in it. And I didn't really watch the Leitrim or Sligo game. They were kind of one-sided affairs anyway. So I was kind of half paying attention to them. And then I watched the Galway game obviously closely and found it very, very difficult. I hated it. And obviously, particularly the first half, because things weren't going particularly well for us. And I just found it very, very tough. I didn't think, I kind of figured when I walked away from it that I wouldn't care as much, but I found that I cared a lot and I really wanted the lads to do well. I was kind of surprised. I was a bit taken aback by that, because, like, if I think back to 2019, which is kind of my last proper year there where I was playing, I remember we played Down in a qualifier game. And I was injured and I was playing against Galway 2 weeks later. I didn't even watch the game. I wasn't following it. I didn't go to the game. I took no heed of it. And then I was playing 2 weeks later. So I kind of thought that's the way it'd be. If I wasn't involved, I wouldn't care. But yeah, it's very much the opposite. So I'm looking forward to the weekend, but I find it difficult to watch it, to be honest.
Will you go to the game, Jamie?
I'll go to the game. I missed the Galway game because I was at home for it and I'd have gone to it if it was in Castlebar, but when they moved it to Dublin, then I stayed put. But yeah, the lads will sort me out for a ticket and I'll go all right.
We had a list of questions here and it was like, if you have any stories about people wrecking your head about tickets before a huge game like this, I want to contrast that with you looking for them now. Did you ever get that, or were you shielded away from it carefully? Did you ever have someone just going, Jamie, I hope you don't mind me asking type stuff?
No, it didn't happen too often. Like, the only people that I'd ask would be like friends that would know it's kind of okay to ask. And to be fair, generally people that are into football or know football know not to ask those types of questions, particularly with me. And I was kind of shielded from it because, so there was three of us there for most of my career, really. And myself and Connor being Galway or Dublin, and I was always in Dublin. So if tickets are given out on a Tuesday night, we'll say, I'm going straight home. So the guys in charge would know to give all the tickets to Aidan, and then Aidan would just go home and give them to Dad. And Dad was kind of the gatekeeper for the rest of the week. So there could be anywhere from kind of 60 to 100 tickets floating around our house. And I just tell him to give one to my wife and one to a couple of friends or whatever it is. And I took no heed of it apart from that.
I'm just thinking, Edwin, the O'Shea household was like a small junior club there.
Yeah, I was wondering why there was so much traffic there in the weeks of games going up the road to the house, but it's all starting to make sense now. I'm not sure how many people left with tickets, you know, because you have a fairly big family, in fairness as well, Jamie, to sort out. And it was a big, I know we spoke about this before, it was a big occasion for, and still is, for family members, extended family, that you... that they were able to meet up and go and cheer on the three in big games in Dublin.
Yeah, it probably wasn't in the latter years I realised how big of an event it was for them, because it would have brought all the family up from Kerry and Wexford and obviously Mayo. So it was a great occasion for them. Like, you know, they got to meet up three or four times a year when otherwise they probably wouldn't have been meeting up. So yeah, we used to have a habit of going. The team would usually go back after games. They'd go back to the hotel, and myself and the lads would head over to Croke Park Hotel afterwards to see them all. But yeah, it's great to meet up with everybody, and it was a nice outlet for them for a long time. It still is.
That kind of brings me to something I was talking about in the podcast the last day, Seamus. Like, I was on, you know, in my role doing post-game interviews, I've been under the stand a lot of times after you lost of all earnings. And you, as you know yourself, we're standing there and we witness maybe you meeting your families and stuff, and just real personal moments that are just that, not for us to necessarily report on. But I've seen it, and I've seen the emotion and the disappointment. And my question to you is, do you think the young lads after last year's final had a major advantage compared to other All-Irelands by not having any of that? You know, so they left Croke Park, as you know, it was all quarantined, there was no fans there, and they went straight home, and it was Christmas and things moved on. Were you kind of envious of them in that kind of sense?
Yeah, it's hard to know. It took the emotion out of it a small bit, because yeah, we literally went back to the hotel and you know, had a few drinks and went back home. Then the following day, it was very low key. And then all of a sudden, it was Christmas. You're right. So, but at the same time, it is nice to see your family and everybody afterwards, because, you know, those people put a huge amount on the line for you throughout the year. So it's, you know, it's important to spend time with them afterwards. But yeah, to be honest, I feel for the young fellas, because like when I was starting out my career, and particularly when we started to get a little bit of success, like a big part of playing and winning was getting to go out afterwards and having fun. Do you know what I mean? So like, you know, we get four or five big nights out a year, or probably a couple of days out after a game. And these poor fellas have spent two seasons anyway, the last couple of years, where they're literally, you know, going to a hotel on their own to have a few drinks or going straight home. So I'm sure they're looking forward to things getting back to normal and being able to go out and have a few drinks after a win.
I'd say James Horan disagrees with you on that, but yeah, I hear you.
James is very good at that kind of stuff, I think.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, no, he'd encourage it. It's important. Like, there's no point in, you know, spending, you know, that amount of energy and effort trying to win something if you can't go out and enjoy it afterwards. So it's a big part of it. It's an important part of it. And it was something I found difficult actually last year, was that like there was a whole lot of young fellas that came in and you'd love to be able to go for a few drinks with them afterwards and have the crack and get to know them better. And then, you know, all of a sudden you have to all go home, so you don't really get to spend as much time with them as you'd like. So I missed that part of it.
Yeah, it was interesting. When you were chatting to Edwin for the Mayo News piece, Seamus, you spoke of, it was just a quote that jumped out at me, that, you know, 2012, 13, 14, your life revolved around football. And then, you know, as you grew older, you know, the other things came into play and you felt there was a balance there. What I wasn't quite sure, and I don't know if you have a clarity on this, is whether you thought one was better than the other. Like, do you think it's good to be, when you're younger, that obsessed with it, and good to release it then? Or if you look back on it, do you wish you were... I don't know, less kind of wrapped up in all the details of it at 12, 13, in 2012, 13 and 14?
I'm not sure which is better. It's definitely not healthy to be as obsessed with it as I was probably. But again, like, it's like, to be honest, if my life hadn't changed, I probably would have stayed the same. Do you know what I mean? Like, but like, things get a little bit different. Like, fellas start having kids and careers become more important. And all of a sudden your time gets a little bit, gets a little bit tighter. So you don't have much of a choice except to kind of be a bit more balanced about things. So it's definitely healthier to make sure that your career is on track and things are going well and you're managing your relationships well rather than being completely obsessed. But yeah, certainly there was a point early on for those couple of years where there wasn't a whole lot else going on in my life except playing football, which probably wasn't the healthiest in the world.
You see, and Adrian, I'll let you chime in here a little bit after as well, but like, you know why we're interested in this as well, Jamie. People want to hear from you and we love hearing your story, but we're really interested in this group of young players, Matty Horan, Oisin Mullen, Tommy Conroy, all these guys coming through, Jordan Flynn, whoever else. God, I could name so many. And Hessian has been so good lately. Brickenden's coming into sight and so on and so forth. I'm interested in that perspective though, because it's such an amazing time for them, isn't it? Like, it's such an emergence. It happens so fast. And you're part of this group that you used to be a fan and you used to watch it. And what kind of advice could you give them? What advice did you try to give them, if any?
I let them have it, to be honest. Like, it was, they were breath of fresh air when they came in, to be honest. And I came back late last year, so I probably didn't get to see them up close and personal for most of the year. And then when I came in, I was blown away by the kind of talent that was around the place. Like, to be fair to them, they've done really well. They've developed a huge amount over the last couple of years. All of a sudden, like, they've won a couple of Connacht titles, with a few of them won the National League title. They've played in an All-Ireland final, an All-Ireland semi-final, and they're very quickly becoming kind of the leaders of the group. Their trajectory is very much up, and they're still so young. They've so much ahead of them. But they're a really good group of players, and there's obviously more behind them that are starting to make a bit of an impact this year as well. But yeah, like, I remember the first time Oisin Mullen came in. He came in in 2019, and I was a bit older then, so I probably wouldn't have taken much heed as to the underage around the place. I wouldn't have known the lads, and he came in after they got lost, I think, an under-20 championship match. So he came in the following night at training, and I was chatting to him before, and he sat down beside me and chatting away to him for a few minutes, and then we went out training. And I was just, oh, who the fuck is this fella? Like, he was deadly. And I was asking, lads, where did he come out of? So straight away, I was like, this fella's different. And like, when he came back in at the start of last year, then it was no surprise to anybody that he was just like, the kid looks like a 10-year veteran already. Do you know what I mean? So they have that kind of way about them, but they've done really well so far.
Jamie, do you think are those group of lads lucky in some respects that they're coming into a squad where there's such a well-ingrained culture? And we have a habit of talking of Everton since 2011 being different than what came before, but going back to when you would have first started out in 2008, I think, did you notice, like, is there the gulf? Was there a gulf in culture there that the young lads are coming into now compared to what you would have experienced? Or do we make too much of that sometimes?
There probably was, to be fair, yeah. There was a bit of a, like, things were very different back in 2008, 2009, whereas now the young fellas are coming into, like, a really experienced environment. A lot of top players who've been around the block for a long time are still really hungry and want to do well. The young fellas just take that in and carry it on. So they're also lucky, not lucky, I guess, but the team has obviously gone through a bit of transition. So they've come in at a good time as well. Do you know, I kind of fell for some of the lads that came in the middle of the last decade where they were coming into a panel where it was pretty settled and you'd guys in the middle of their prime that just weren't good. Like, they weren't going to get in ahead of them, unfortunately. And like, if you were trying to make it as a half back around 2015 or 2016, it was going to be pretty difficult to get in there. So in some respects, the fact that a lot of us have moved on now, it's kind of created a bit of a vacuum as well, which they filled really well, and kind of probably hastened their development a little bit as well. So that's probably suited them.
Yeah. I like, was just watching how relax there. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head there too. And I think Chair Flanagan was saying it, that how quickly they've just built themselves up, both physically and just the way they kind of conduct themselves on the football pitch. I'm thinking of Ryan O'Donoghue in last year's All-Ireland final, Jamie, like, God, that the occasion didn't get the better of him, that's for sure. And there's so many other examples. I mean, obviously Oisin being the prime example in that particular game.
Yeah, they did really well. They did well. And like, look, it was their first day out. They were pretty inexperienced at that point, and hopefully they've taken a lot from it. But yeah, look, Ryan's done really well. And again, like, he's, since Killeen's been out as well, he stepped up and started taking the frees, and he's been excellent so far. So long may it continue.
Just on that, Jamie, like, again, a lot of young lads have come through in the last couple of years, and there would have been fellas that came through in 11, 12 and 13 as well. Is there a mindset with James Horan that, or, you know, is there a secret there in terms of how these guys come on stream so quickly? Because, you know, when different players were retiring in the last few years, there was a lot of people thinking, oh God, there's going to be such a big hole there. But so many players have come through, and in such a short period of time, when we would have felt a lot of these guys would have needed 2, 3, 4 years to get established, but they've done it so much quicker than that.
Yeah, no, I think James is really good at creating that kind of a culture. Like, he empowers the players, and the players know, because they can see around the place that, like, if I'm moving well enough here, if I'm playing well enough, that this fella is going to throw me in. Do you know what I mean? James, to be fair to him, has always kind of trumped younger players over older players, and we probably benefited from that early on as well, where some older guys that were hanging around the place, you know, didn't get as much game time or were moved on, and a whole load of young fellas came through, and that's probably happened again over the last number of years. Like, if it's a call to be made between a young fella and an older fella, James probably going to go with the young fella. And they see that, and they've obviously taken advantage of it, and they're doing really well.
Is it frustrating as one of those older fellas last year in that regard?
No, not for me. Like, I had young Maddie Ruan from Brafey coming in, and it would have been frustrating if I was still able to play, but I was so far off the pace now at the end, there was nothing to be upset about, so it was fine.
It is funny, because I did get that from your piece with Edwin, that, like, a lot of players have, like, I'd say every transition to retirement is different for every player, but yours possibly was less mentally draining on you because of that, was it? Or am I overstating it there?
Yeah, no, like, it's pretty easy for me to stand back from it now and try and enjoy watching the games, because, like, if I was still able to play, I'd still be playing. Do you know what I mean? Like, if I was capable of being out there, I wouldn't have walked away from it. But yeah, like, I probably spoke to Edwin earlier on in the year about it. I've had 4 or 5 surgeries the last few years. And I'm still trying to manage a lot of that kind of stuff. So I'm in no shape to be playing with those fellas. And if I was in there training for 5 minutes, I wouldn't last. So it's easy enough for me to park it and just stand back and enjoy it and support them.
If there's one thing that's come up in the shop this week, Jamie, it's people believe the Mayo are going to give this a right good go. And they believe they have a chance. And I mean all of them, even the pragmatic Mayo fans. But the phrase that comes up again and again is, God, if only we had Killeen. It is the phrase, like, it's all we're thinking. And my first question to you is, just think of yourself in the squad there. How did you deal with things like that in the past when you lost a key player? How did you rationalize in your head that you still had a chance, that you could adapt? At the same time, you couldn't fool yourself that you've just lost one of the greatest forwards in the history of football, never mind Mayo football.
Yeah. Like, Killeen's a good mate of mine, and, like, you're 100% right. He's an unbelievable player, and he's been just so important to Mayo for the last 10 years. As rootless as it sounds, you get forgotten about pretty quickly when you're not playing, regardless of who it is. Now, obviously, we'd love to have Killeen. Like, he's a huge loss to us. But when you're not there, you're not there, and the team just moves on. There'd be nobody inside there talking about, you know, if we'd Killeen or if we'd this or if we'd that. We don't have Jason Doherty either. We don't have Brendan Harrison either. And there'd be nobody talking about those lads either. And, like, it's cutthroat, but that's the way it has to be. Like, if you're not able to play, you're not any good to the team, unfortunately. So the team just has to move on. I remember it was the same in 2012. We didn't have Andy. There was probably other instances throughout the years as well where we were missing players. But yeah, like, you just move on. You've no choice. That's just the way it has to be, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say, you know, like, they're not there, but, like, do you think yourself individually as well, you don't think about the game, I guess, the way fans do? So you're not necessarily even, like, honestly, do you not even think about it? Does it not even come into your head? Like, I know it's not in the conversations, I know it's not in the plans, but do you not find yourself waking up on the Tuesday before the big game going, oh God, if only?
No, as a supporter, I might now be chatting, like, Yeah, of course. Just, like, I remember saying to Ed around the year, like, yeah, I think it'd be great to have Jason Doherty and Brendan Harrison, and it'd still be great to have them, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen this year. So, like, yeah, like, as players, you don't really, like, it doesn't really cross your mind, to be honest. You don't really think about it, and just get on with it. You go with what you have. Like, it can work out for you as well. I remember, obviously, Kerry won in 2014 without Colin Cooper. There's been instances where it's kind of worked in the team's favour, or, you know, it's worked out anyway. So hopefully that's the way it happens for us.
Yeah, Shamie, with Killian missing, what kind of opportunities does that create for guys in the squad? Because obviously, like, he's not just a big scorer. It's not just Freeze, his threat from open play and his leadership. But does that kind of bring out the best in other guys who might have been playing somewhat in his shadow? And what kind of other opportunities might it present?
I think it does, to be honest, yeah. And I was chatting to Killian a couple of weeks after he got hurt as well. And I was like, in a way, it would have been worse if he had a bad injury and just kept playing, because he would have, realistically. And he's done it in the past. And if we had Killian at kind of 50%, he'd still be starting. But you could still have a situation then where maybe Ryan or Tommy or whoever's there might be deferring to him a small bit and mightn't stick the chest out as much and take on the responsibility. Whereas now, they've no choice in the matter. They know they have big boots to fill, and they know they kind of have to take on the responsibility. And all of a sudden, they've been thrust into that kind of spot where those two lads in particular, there's a huge amount of responsibility on them, and they just have to get on with it. So in a weird way, it's like, yeah, it's better that he's not there at all than he's kind of half fit and fellas aren't sure, you know, where he's at or you know, how much he's going to be able to do.
Moving on then, Shamie, to the Dublin side of things. And we would have spoken earlier in the year about how in 16 and 17, there were so many matchups to be taken care of. Like, you tie up Dermot Connolly, or you keep him relatively quiet as Lee Keegan did, or you maybe tie up Bernard Brogan as Brendan Harrison did. There's still four other, like, top-class forwards and a bench brimming with forward talent to deal with. Looking at Dublin this year, there's obviously a lot of quality still there, but do you feel that the threat isn't the same? And I don't think it is, but how much does that enable Mayo then, that they might not have as many headaches when it comes to matchups?
Yeah, it probably does a bit. There's still obviously some pretty key matchups, like Conor Callaghan, Kieran Kilkenny, Brian Fenton. But you're right, like, there's not as many as there was before. And I remember I can't remember what year it was, when Jeremy Connolly was supposed to be suspended and got off with it and played. I think it might have been 16. And, like, we weren't overly concerned about it because we knew Leroy matched up really well. But, you know, back in it now, like, it would have been nicer to have Leroy for somebody else. And even looking back to a couple of years ago, we pushed Paddy up to the half forward line to pick up Jack McCaffrey. And again, Paddy did really, really well and probably got the better of Jack. But again, that's taken away from Paddy's game. So the more fellas you can, like, you end up using a lot of your best players to negate their best players, and you kind of cancel each other out. And that's obviously not ideal. So you're right. Like, they've lost a huge amount of talent. So they obviously don't have the same amount of threats, or so far anyway, they haven't posed the same kind of threat to the team so far. So you'd hope that works in our favor a little bit. And it allows some of our players to concentrate in their games a little bit more, while still being conscious that, look, we still need to look after those two or three really key guys for them.
What's your assessment on the narrative that's out there at the minute, that they're people are saying they're vulnerable, they've never played as poorly since 2011 or whatever, and so on and so forth, and that, you know, are people, you know, just hoping that, you know, they'll see a change, or is there enough there in what you've seen from Dublin this year to think that Mayo have as good a chance as they've had in a long time against them?
That narrative seems to be out there. Like, it's pretty uncontroversial, I think. Like, they've lost a huge amount of players. So I don't think even the Dublin lads would suggest that they're better than they were 3 or 4 years ago. That, like, that would mean that the fellas they lost were fairly easily replaceable. And I don't think that's the case. So I think it's fair. And obviously they haven't set the world alight so far, which is possibly giving people hope, as you said. The other thing is, like, and to be honest, I'm surprised they've done it for so long. Like, they were so ruthless for so long in Leinster in particular. Like, they never seemed to take the foot off the gas. And they seem to have done that this year where, look, they're still winning very, very comfortably, but they're not probably as ruthless as they were. And is that down to maybe there's not as much talent there, maybe they're not as good, or is it because they're just bored of winning Leinster? and they've got another couple of gears in them. So like, I don't know is the answer, but look, I think Mayo are in a pretty good position. Like the Dublin game, I watched the Dublin Kildare game the last day, like they kind of kept them at arm's length the whole game. Like they never looked like they were in any kind of bother. They just weren't as good as they used to be. They usually blow them out by maybe 15 or 20 points. But they're just very composed, methodical, and it isn't nice to watch. And it's not exciting, but they got the job done. And I know from, like, we were in similar positions down the years where we'd either win a bad kind of championship or we'd scrape through the qualifiers. And they'd be the same kind of talk. They're like, you know, Mayo aren't going well. But like in the back of our minds, like we'd be buzzing to get ready for Croke Park. And we knew like the season started as soon as we finished either the qualifiers or the Connacht Championship. And we were getting ready to play a big team in Croke Park. And invariably we put in a big performance when we got there. And yeah, I'd be surprised if there isn't one in Dublin.
You're listening to the Mayo News Football Podcast in association with Ceramic City Tiles and Bathrooms, Castlebar, Charlestown and Sligo, and Swinford Motors, your Toyota dealer for new and used cars in Mayo. Visit their website at swinfordmotors.com.
Welcome back. Seamus, I want to ask you a tough question here. Contrast for me the way Stephen Rochford approached a Mayo-Dublin match to the way James Horan approaches a Mayo-Dublin match. I know we all have our own thoughts on this. I want to hear it from you.
To be fair, it's not just the difference between, you know, Rochie and James. Like they inherited different teams in lots of ways. Like in 2012 and 2013, we were a bunch of young fellas running around the place and there was a huge amount of energy and excitement to us. And we all got a little bit older. And as players, to be honest, we didn't really want to play like that anymore either because we were getting, it was tougher on us. And then, yeah, Rochie was probably a little bit more pragmatic. So we probably cut our cloth to measure a little bit. Like, there's small little things like pushing up on a kickout is something that James is always big on. And I'm sure that adds a push up the next day. We probably did it a little bit too much early on because we try and just run through teams and just press them all the time. In latter years, we started to kind of tailor that a little bit. So we push at certain times. We push up after a set piece or when we knew everybody was high enough that we had a good position to do it. But if we felt like it wasn't on, that we weren't going to waste energy doing it. Small things like that that we just tailor a little bit. But apart from that, like the matchups were, I think, pretty similar. Again, they're quite different teams between even 13 and 16 and 17 as well. But I think both of those teams matured quite a bit. Dublin probably played similar to us in 2013. By the time we got to 16 and 17, both teams have matured a bit where they were a little bit more composed and less kind of cavalier in their approach, I guess.
Yeah, it's that kind of, the sides knew each other so well. And I was interested in something Billy Joe Paddon said to that, which last week he was talking about the fact that, you know, Mayo sides like would just have a bit more patience at times under Rochford. But again, does that change your point about the question, or does that kind of again just say that you were fitting whatever was happening in front of you?
Yeah, we probably did it. Like I think sometimes that we look back in those couple of years, and I do it myself with kind of rose tinted glasses. We played really poorly for a lot of those years. Do you know what I mean? Like we struggled badly in Connacht, we struggled badly in the qualifiers, and then yeah, when it got to those big games, and sorry, that's not down to Rochford, that's down to us as much as anybody. But we struggled badly, and then we were able to put in really big performances when we need to against Tyrone, Kerry, Dublin, etc. But if you look at the totality of those years, it's probably a lot of not great football played as well. But certainly it was Billy Joe's point that, yeah, we were probably a little bit more composed and patient. Again, that's a combination of maybe the approach between your managers and the fact that the players were a little bit more mature and had a bit more know-how at that stage.
Do Mayo need to be different the next day, Shamey, in terms of how they approach this game? Like it's 2012, I think, since Mayo have beaten Dublin, and there have been so many close games. But in terms of finding a way over the line, like, you know, people talk about needing to maybe do something tactically a little bit different or come with something a little bit different. Is that how you would see it? Or is it just a case of trying to just find that little bit extra from players around the field to get over the line?
Look, I don't know, but I don't think that there's... I don't see there going to be some kind of huge tactical change the next day. I think Mayo are going to play the way they're going to play. I think Dublin will do the same. Anytime we played Dublin throughout those years, I don't remember them ever throwing anything at us that surprised us or kind of thought, geez, I didn't expect that. Like, never happened. even I remember in 16 when we conceded those two goals, the one that came off Boyler, that was a set free kick which we'd worked on the week before. We knew it was coming. That's why Boyler was there. We knew exactly what they were doing, and we just got unlucky and it just came off Boyler badly. Like, but there was very rarely anything that surprised us, and we're probably the same. The only thing I'd say is now that, like, because that familiarity isn't there, there's a whole load of new players. That in itself can create opportunities. Like, they're not going to be familiar with Darren McHale or Brian Walsh or Pádraig Cathaoirí or some of these guys. Do you know what I mean? As they would have been with say, Killian. And similarly, we're not probably as familiar with some of their players, like the Baskels and Lahef or McDade or some of the guys that are only there the last couple of years. They were pretty settled in the last decade, where guys were so used to each other that it was probably easy to get ready for the game. Whereas now, even small things like that, where you've got a new guy on the pitch, you're not sure which foot he kicks with, you're not sure what his tendencies are. Small things like that can just create opportunities out of nothing. But I don't expect there to be some kind of tactical change. I think Mayo set up the way they're set up. There's probably a couple of question marks over a few positions, but I think they'll play the way that they've been playing.
It's fascinating what you say there about that Colin Boyle own goal in the 16 final. So you'd obviously, and then that's the level, I suppose, for people watching from the outside, that's the level of research and analysis that goes on, that you're watching trends and you're watching what they're doing. And I think, was it a Jerry McConnelly long ball in that was being played to set that up, if I remember rightly? But obviously you had analysed that to that degree and you were ready for it. And we've talked so much about the own goals, but it was that's fascinating to find out that it came from ye having researched Dublin so closely.
Yeah, it was Jerry McConnelly ball. It was always Dean Rocking over the top. They tried to pull everybody out and hit Dean Rocking over the top. So yeah, we knew it was coming. We just got unlucky. So, but yeah, you'd spend a huge amount of time looking at everything. Kickouts is obviously a big one, but yeah, like set pieces in particular, because you're able to sit back and analyse some of those things. So the lads, I'm sure, would have spent a huge amount of time over the last couple of weeks looking at little things like that and trying to take advantage of them or get ready for them.
We would have spoken earlier in the year, Shamie, about, and you were saying when you started off playing, kickouts was a very different thing. Like, you were competing in aerial battles, 50-50 or long kickouts with the likes of, you know, the Pierce O'Neills and the Kevin Hughes, big, strong men. And it evolved so much over time. But and now the position of goalkeeper has evolved almost beyond recognition. But when you were playing in those finals in 16 and 17, were you always aware of what was happening with every kickout? Was it that well defined? Did you know the ball is coming on top of me, or it's not coming on top of me, and I have to get ready to be in position for where the ball is going to travel after the kickout is taken? Like, how precise are those kickouts in the modern game in terms of the planning in advance?
Yeah, like, it probably changed over the years, to be honest. So, like, you'd have a fair idea. Yeah, I mean, there'd be certain positions you'd be willing to give up a kickout, for instance. So you'll notice the next day that there'll probably be a certain amount of kickouts that'll go to one particular side and it'll go to a cornerback. And the other team will try and squeeze that sideline and force them up that sideline. Both teams are willing to give up that kickout because it allows them an opportunity to get set up. And it makes it difficult for the team. They have to work their way through 120 yards of grass to try and get to the far end of the pitch. And then the other ones, like, we try to do something different a lot of the time with Dublin. So, like, as I said earlier on, like, back in the early part of the decade, we pushed up on everything. Problem with that is you get tired towards the end of the second half or the middle of the second half even, and all of a sudden the game becomes very, very loose and it just becomes a bit of a free-for-all. I remember in 2015, we conceded kickouts and people thought we were mad. But again, the purpose of it was, listen, your cornerback has the ball now. Let's see, score from 100 yards away. And then, as I said earlier, in 16, 17, we probably tailored it a little bit. You push up sometimes, other times you won't. You'll trap them and you put them in certain positions. And then Dublin changed what they did a little bit as well. Like, they got very conservative at times, at certain points where they'd keep just going to the corner back. The last number of years, they've gotten a little bit braver again, where they've got the likes of Fenton, Brian Howard, and Cluxon would be willing to lose kickouts because he knew if he kept at it, something would come of it. an obvious one was the Jack McCaffrey's goal in 2019 against Kerry, where he kept looking for Brian Howard and it worked once and they got an unbelievable goal out of it. A few years before that, he probably would have just kept kicking it out to the cornerback, but it's a bit of a risk reward. The only thing I'd say about the kickouts, like, we spent a huge amount of time looking at kickouts, and last year the lads did unbelievably well on kickouts. I think we got on top of them and we won that area. In 17, we won, I'd say, 6 or 7 of their kickouts in the first half. So it's not something we've ever struggled with, really. We still haven't won the game. Like, we did that in the first half in 17. We went in a point down. We dominated last year. We still lost the game by whatever it was. Dublin are well capable of winning these games with a lower number of possessions. So kickouts are important and everything, but it's not going to solve everything that people think it is.
I'm trying to find a way to ask you this that isn't just kind of going over old wounds, but I like, you had a comment to Edwin in your piece about just a ball bouncing off the knee of, I think it was Michael Darren McCauley, I might be wrong there, but you know, you were just saying, like, people analyze that last winning point, but they just didn't realize that it just came from nothing, it came from luck. And this is getting, this is kind of where you were steering me there when you said that. It's like, yeah, you analyze the hell out of the game and then a ball bounces off Cullen Boyle's shin or whatever and it goes into the goal. Like, I mean, how do you rationalize that as a sports person? I mean, you've probably watched some of the Olympics and you've seen these people who've built in their training for 4 years and something goes wrong. Do you know? And you're the same. Like, I mean, you do Everton right in 16. You had, as everyone remembers, all three finals, you were brilliant. But I remember the 16 replay performance from yourself, Shamey. I don't know if you picked that out as one of your best, but I know John Gundogan was talking about it this week. But those kind of details, you know, players delivered in so many different ways. And then the ball bounces wrong.
Ah, yeah, but you'd have to give a huge amount of credit to Dublin as well. Like, they've had a knack over the years at seeing those games out, and particularly in kind of the second game in 16, the game in 17, 2019 against Kerry, where they were under a bit of pressure. Like, they've just been very composed in those situations and have been able to see it out. I think that's going to be the challenge for Mayo at the weekend. Is that, like, look, I think they can stick with Dublin, but it's been able to manage that last kind of 10 or 15 minutes and seeing the thing out, because those lads are just very, very experienced at it. And, like, the confidence they must have is unbelievable. Like, most of these lads have never lost a game. Like, the guys that are on the longest, Kieran Kilkenny has lost 2 championship games in whatever, 10 or 11 years. So, like, it's hard to see it happening until it happens. You know what I mean? And that's the kind of challenge the lads have. But look, I think they have a great chance. But yeah, I think, like, a couple of things. I think we conceded 2 bad goals last year that were very avoidable. And I think we need to try and avoid doing that if we can. If they get a great goal, fair play to them. But, you know, both of those last year could have been avoided. And what that does then is it puts you on the back foot straight away. And then they're able to kind of play this hand passing game out the field. They're not under as much pressure. Whereas if you drag them into a battle where they're, you know, it's nip and tuck, or you go a little bit ahead of them, then it forces them out of their shell a little bit. They have to play, and then that creates chances for us up the other end. So if we can do that, that'll give us a good platform. And then, yeah, if it comes down to that last 10 or 15 minutes, then, you know, to be fair to them, they've been very good at it, but we just need to try and get the better of them on this occasion during that period.
I'm just thinking that the Galway lads the last day thought they had control of a game like Mayo often did against Dublin, and then the 2 McLaughlins came on and they're like, my God, what's going on? And the game's getting away from us. You've experienced that from the other end when Dublin started bringing off the bench. So just talk to me as a player who was on the pitch when Dublin subs started coming on. Is it like a mad game of chess? Are you suddenly looking around yourself going, okay, I'm okay in my position, but who's this? Howard's on now. What's he doing? Like, is that what happens?
Yeah, it just creates a lot of flux. It's hard to manage, to be honest, because you could have 8-10 players coming on the pitch in the last 20 minutes of the game. And with the best will in the world, it's going to create some kind of chaos. And that's why the last, you know, 20 minutes tend to be the loosest of the game. Obviously, fellas are tired anyway, but then there tends to be a little bit of confusion. And it can be difficult to manage. You do the best you can and you have, you know, scenarios for when such and such comes on that he picks him up. But it's not that straightforward. And when you have that much flux in a game, it can tend to create a bit of looseness and opportunities for both sides.
I presume you're excited about the fact that Mayo have the potential of matching them in terms of that, you know, with the bench that Mayo have at the moment.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do, because obviously Owen and Kevin did really well when they came in the last day and had a huge impact. They're like, they've probably done enough to start, but like, yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether James decides to keep them in reserve or have them from the start, because they're obviously really good the last day when they came in. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage that. But either way, hopefully we've enough in reserve to come in and make an impact during that period.
Shamie, compare and contrast the next few days now as someone who's going to be going and watching the match and enjoying it compared to if you were involved and if you were playing like in 16 and 17. What will you enjoy this week that you wouldn't have been able to enjoy when you were playing? And what do you miss that obviously you would have embraced as a player?
I didn't enjoy the build up to the game at all. I kind of just wanted the week to fast forward a bit. I didn't, because people would be asking you about it, you don't want to talk about it. And I found, work a bit of a drag, and you kind of just wanted it to come. Like usually we'd meet up on a Saturday afternoon, and even on the Friday, I'd be kind of just anxious. And then once I got in to meet the lads in the hotel, I'd be fine. I'd be happy out. Because you'd be kind of among the lads and you'd be concentrating on the game and everyone's in the same position and you all know how each other is feeling. This week, I'm not sure enjoy is the right word. I find it more difficult in lots of ways because, as I said earlier on, I just want the lads to do really well. I'm dying for them to win, and I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not looking forward to it. I know that there's supposed to be social distancing in Croke Park, so I'm going to try and find some corner of it on my own so I can just sit down and watch it. Besides talking to anybody, but I'm not sure I'm looking forward to it, but hopefully it goes well.
Billy Joe Pan watched last year's All-Ireland final on the Hill. I don't know if I'd recommend it for you now if the Dublin fans are there, but you could try that, see if you find a corner.
Nah, I'm all right, thanks.
You know, you are you aware your mum was a star of the Mayo News Football podcast last year, Sheila, chatting to Mike?
So I heard afterwards, I never heard it, but it was mentioned to me, right, yeah.
And one thing that you really brought home was how much the families, and you said it at the start, how much the families get out of the connections and the travel and how much it means to them, and how I guess they can share, in the ups and downs of what their loved ones go through in an intercounty season. But she must be delighted to be able to get back to games.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, Dad was losing his mind the last while because he was at home a bit during lockdown and there was no club football, there was no county football, there was nothing going on and he didn't know what to do with himself. So I think they're all delighted there's something back on, they can get back to reality a small bit. I know it's great for people in general. I remember like during whatever it was last year, there was kind of news that, potentially the championship was going to go ahead. And in my head, I was thinking like, who cares? It's not the most important thing in the world. But then people were saying to me, listen, like we need something at the weekend to keep us going here. Like we need something to watch. So it's a bit of a release for people during this time and has been over the last year. So yeah, I certainly think everybody's delighted that it's back up and running. And at least we've got decent crowds going as well now, which is good.
It's kind of like you with the NFL. You need that to kind of give you a bit of release. And even you're telling Edwin you're a big fan of it, are you?
No, I'm an NBA fan. So it was off actually the last few weeks, so it worked
out
well.
Bad research out of me. Oh, God, sorry. Yeah. Who's your NBA team?
The Spurs, San Antonio Spurs, but they haven't been good now for 4 or 5 years. So I was off the last few weeks and it worked out well because the NBA Finals was on. So I got, I think, game 3, 4, and 5 because it was on the middle of the night. And then it worked out well as well because I had a few weeks off and the Olympics was on. So I had a good few weeks in front of the television, so it was great.
I presume you've read a lot of Greg Popovich's the work I've just written about him and all his interviews and some of his work. He's an incredible, inspirational coach, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Big fan. We went to Boston a few years ago on an All-Star trip, and it just so happened that the Spurs were playing the Celtics that Sunday afternoon. So I got to see, it was 2014. So I got to see, Pop and Tim Duncan and Ginobili and all those guys. So that was pretty cool. But big Spurs fan.
Nice. Like that. All right, that's it from us. We're back, remember, with the big preview show. Mike Finnerty, Billy Joe Padden, Kevin McStay, dissecting Everton. Talk to you soon.